is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing is Close to You by The Carpenters.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So here's a description of the album. It says, Close to You is the breakthrough album by the American pop duo The Carpenters, consisting of siblings Karen and Richard Carpenter. Marking their second studio release, the album propelled them into the spotlight with its soft pop sound, lush orchestration, and Karen Carpenter's signature warm, melancholic vocals. The album features the iconic title track, They Long to Be Close to You, written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, which became a number one hit and earned the duo two Grammy Awards. Another standout single, We've Only Just Begun, also became a wedding standard and a top charting success. With a blend of pop, soft rock, and easy listening, Close to You captures the early 70s zeitgeist of romantic optimism and gentle melodies. The album's polished production, melodic arrangements by Richard Carpenter, and Karen's emotionally resonant voice established the Carpenters as leading figures in the adult contemporary genre. Yeah, so the album was released on August 19th, 1970 on A&M Records, and the genre is pop, and the label, A&M Records, and produced by Jack Doherty. And what we'd like to do is we've linked the album in the show notes to both Spotify and Apple Music, and we encourage you to listen along. And what we do is we stop halfway through after side one, and there's 12 songs on the album. So side one, it's split pretty evenly between six and six. So after songs, the album starts with We've Only Just Begun, and ends with They Long to Be Close to You. So you can stop after that song, and we'll discuss at the halfway point. And just want to remind you to check out, if you feel inclined, you can help us out on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress, and there's lots of cool stuff there. You can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can get a shout out during these episodes, and also pick an album for us to review. So there's lots of cool stuff there. But without further ado, let's get into it here. Okay, here's the first song, We've Only Just Begun. Here we go. Okay, and ending side one with They Long to Be Close to You. Yeah, this is okay. It's not as bad as I thought that the Carpenters were.
Yeah, it's not as bad as you were maybe like afraid it would be, sort of thing. But it's, I don't know, this, I'm having a hard time. I thought the last, I mean, of the six songs we've listened to so far, the last three songs were better.
I agree. I think that was a really interesting interpretation of Help. I thought that was really well done. Sort of turned the song into, well, I mean, it had a different feel to it. Yeah. And yeah, the harmonies on the last song, of the last minute of the last song, were really, that was probably my favorite part so far. It's like, wow, this is actually, I can actually appreciate the arrangement of those harmonies on this. Like, okay, this is actually really well done.
Yeah, I agree. But the first three songs in particular, I don't know, they're not for me. They're a little too flowery for me.
Yeah, they're a little too, like overly sentimental, overly, it's that sort of, it's that 70s. She's a great singer, but like it's the same like Barbra Streisand sort of Carpenters kind of mellow soft rock pop stuff.
Yeah, from the 70s. I know exactly what, well, we just listened to some of it. Yeah, it's never really appealed to me. It's, you know, of all the stuff that came out of the 70s, this is probably the stuff that I listen to the least. Well, I just don't listen to it for the most part. That's, which is interesting, like putting this album on, like, gives you an opportunity to appreciate something, because I never would have thought to put this on.
Exactly. You know, and that's the thing about this podcast. And honestly, when it came up, I was like, really? We're going to listen to the Carpenters? But, you know, it's not that bad, really. It's just, I can appreciate the vocals, the harmonies, but it's too syrupy. It's too commercial too. It's too like, the 70s was, I think, well, that's not even a little bit true. I was going to say the 70s was the first time that music was seen as a commodity, but
that's not even, no.
But it was the beginning of the corporate, I think, takeover of music.
Yeah, there was a little bit going on before that. Like, there's always been sort of, you know, hokey music that appealed to certain people. It's just, you know, it's always been there. Sometimes it's more popular than others, and yeah, it's just, I don't know what else to say about it, but, you know, I do know they're very talented. Did you know that Karen Carpenter was like a really good drummer?
Yeah.
I think we discussed that before.
Yeah. She really is. She is like, both of them are very talented. They're like, Richard Carpenter, I think he's doing a lot of the string arrangements on here and stuff. So like, they're both, like, I'm not saying they're not talented. I'm not saying that they're not. I've realized this as I've gotten older, that all, just because the art doesn't appeal to me, all art is valid, but it might not necessarily appeal to me. Rather than taking an objective, like, this sucks. No, it doesn't suck. It's just not for me. Right? And I think that's putting an objective sort of stamp saying this sucks is very, it's a very, a young person's thing. And I think over the last maybe 10 years, I've realized, well, wait a minute, it doesn't suck. They're making art, they're expressing themselves, but it's just, it's not for me, and that's okay.
No, I agree. There's always been a part of me that sort of appreciated that. But yeah, for sure. When you're younger, you're a lot harsher on things that you don't like. Yeah, I can sort of say that that's probably true of me too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's true of everybody that's young. I mean, it's just part of growing up, really, I think. I will say, though, the getting back to their version of Help, I don't know if you knew this, but John Lennon actually said, what might have been one of the last interviews he did, is like, that was the song he was most proud of for writing.
Help?
Help, yeah. Because, and the reason he said that is because, like, they were making the movie and they needed a theme song for the movie, so he wrote that. But looking back, he was going through a bit of a depression at the time, and looking back at the lyrics, he was proud that he wrote those lyrics and that he was that self-aware. And this was like a year before he had tried acid. So he was proud that he was that self-aware without having to have a psychedelic experience. And so he's like, that's the one song that he's the most proud of for writing, because it was his, subconsciously, his self-expression.
Interesting.
And I feel like their version sort of brings that out more than the Beatles version.
Yeah, the Beatles version's very upbeat. The lyrics are not. I've always loved that version. I've always kind of liked Deep Purple's as well. It's a very different one. I've heard a lot of people didn't like it, but I kind of like it. It's again, it's different. The
best songs are ones that you can just play with, like on an acoustic guitar. Like just stripping the song down to its bare bones, just, you know, strumming a guitar and singing it. If it sounds good there, then it's a good song, and you can do
whatever you want.
But it is, as long as it sounds good with just one person and an acoustic guitar, that means it's a good song. The album was it was mixed when it came out. The Of course, Rolling Stone was harsh on the album. I mean, they gave it 2.5 stars out of 5. So that's Rolling Stone in the early 70s. I mean, that's, you know, they're not going to go for something like this. So I, you know, this was a bigger hit this was not a critical darling when it came out. It just,
you know, it was pop music for the masses, and you know, I mean, I guess it's the one song that we just listened to, the, you know, Close to You, They Long to Be Close to You, is the one that won the Grammy.
Yes, that's the one that won the Grammy, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's Burt Bacharach, which explains why it's actually a really well-written song. And that's evident from the first, you know, first few chords. It just goes in an interesting direction musically, almost like right off the bat. Do, 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 do. And then it just shifts right down all automatically down into another like chord, or it's almost like shifting keys.
Yeah. Well, that's what I noticed about like listening to the album and then all of a sudden hearing Help. And then noticing, it's like, oh yeah, the Beatles were really good at choosing chords and chord, like where to go in chords and like the pre-chorus. They really knew like how to take the chord in an interesting direction. So hearing the chord change, those familiar chord changes and Help in this context, it's like, oh yeah, okay. And then hearing something similar to the next one, it's like, oh, the last two songs are more interesting than the rest because it's actually going somewhere interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas, yeah, the other ones are like, it's okay, but it works technically, but it's not really interesting.
And I've always kind of felt like, because they had another band before. I mean, I guess Richard Carpenter, you said his name is?
Yeah.
Yeah, Richard Carpenter. I guess he's using his talents like with like orchestral stuff and stuff and other stuff like that. Especially it works out really well like on a song like Close to You and stuff like that. Songs that really are just really well written songs. But I always kind of felt like Karen Carpenter's, maybe her voice is not being, you know, wasted or anything like that, but I certainly feel like her drumming skills have been wasted.
Yeah, well, she did play drums on this album.
Well, that's cool.
Not on every song, but she did play the drums. It doesn't say what songs she played on. I mean, Hal Blaine is the other drummer.
It's just interesting, like, because she could hold her own against some like really good drummers. I don't know why they even needed to hire another drummer, to be perfectly honest.
It was probably the record company thought it might have been a liability. They just wanted to go with a safe choice. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I've seen footage of her playing and it's like, wow, she's amazing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And she can sing and play the drums at the same time, which is really hard to do. But I did have a few interesting facts about the album. This is actually kind of funny, and this goes to how how commercial it was. It's the song We've Only Just Begun started as a bank commercial. The song was originally written by Paul Williams and Roger Nichols for a Crocker Bank TV commercial. Richard Carpenter saw the ad and thought it had potential as a full song, which led to it becoming one of their biggest hits.
Yeah, that one didn't do anything for me, really. But that's, you know, if he's heard something in it, I guess, you know. It is an interesting sort of like exercise for yourself. I just don't know if I would have necessarily released it. Although I guess it paid for stuff anyway.
I suppose. But yeah, I guess you're right. It's a good, like, taking music and writing lyrics over it is a good exercise for songwriting. But yeah, and the other, Karen did play drums on several tracks. So while later albums often featured session drummers, Karen played drums herself on many of the tracks on Close to You, showcasing her musicianship beyond her famous vocals. But I can't find any information on what songs she played on. Yeah. Recording challenges with Close to You. It took over 30 takes to get the final version of They Long to Be Close to You just right, largely due to balancing Karen's vocals with the orchestration.
Interesting. But that's again, using their talents pretty well. I mean, the fact that they, you know, concentrated so well on having the two balance as well together, and they did do a very good job. I mean, that song is a good song.
It really is, yeah. And yeah, and there's a hidden tribute in the liner notes. Richard included subtle musical nods to his influences, particularly Burt Bacharach, throughout the arrangements, especially in the way he orchestrated the horns and strings. So yeah, I guess his arrangements of the orchestration were influenced by Burt Bacharach and his music. And this album actually helped revive interest in Burt Bacharach's work. After Close to You became a hit, there was a renewed popularity in Bacharach David compositions, leading to a mini revival of their songs on the charts in the early 70s.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I figured this was his heyday, but I guess he was...
Well, I think he had some success. Well, I think that, well, the music industry moves really fast. So like having a year where you don't have any hits can it's like, oh, you're washed up because you didn't write any hits this year.
Yeah, which is a little bit, it's a little bit less so than that. You can go a couple years without releasing an album or something like that. But it definitely helps your career if you can stay in the spotlight somehow. Absolutely. But it's less harsh that way.
Yeah.
Oddly, it's more harsh in other ways, but it's less harsh in that way.
In the sense, yeah, you're right that like not releasing an album every year is fine. But I think more if you're a songwriter and like Tin Pan Alley sort of Brill Building sort of situation, and you don't have any output.
It's kind of like being a car salesman.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, those were some interesting facts about the album. But so I guess we'll get into the second side. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Astroverts podcast. So check those guys out.
What's up, folks? It's Jake here from the Astrovert podcast. Come join us as we play underplayed and undershared bands from across the United States and the world. We found local bands from the Midwest, Florida, the UK, New Zealand, and far, far beyond. Some of our recent favorite discoveries include Sprawl, Glitch Kingdom, City of Auburn, Flake, Michigan, and so many more. We feature rock news.
Rock news! Whoa!
News about rock, rocks are getting rocked.
As well as discuss our band's journey toward finishing our forthcoming EP. Our first two singles, Last Call and Tides of Elephants, both out now. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with another song. What is happening?
Yeah, I was a little bit interested in towards the end of that one as well. It was just like,
why?
Okay.
Well, it's not just that. Why did the whole second side? It was good. It was good. What happened?
I don't know. I think they got the worst out of the way or something like that, which is a dangerous move because you can lose people. They'll put on the album and they'll listen to like the first three songs and go, oh, this is crap.
That's your perspective.
No, but I mean, that's the first three songs on the whole album.
Yes, but I think the record company put those songs first because they thought those would be the big sellers.
Gotcha.
Those are the safe choices. You know, they're the least interesting songs on the album, but they're the safe choices. And then the second side, it's their cover of Baby It's You, that was good. I'll Never Fall in Love Again, that's another Burt Bacharach song. That was fun. Crescent Noon, I thought that was a really good slower song. Mr. Gooder was like a good kind of almost psychedelic sort of thing. And then another song was like a jazz fusion thing at the end.
I know, that was actually pretty good. And I'm sure that was probably Karen playing drums on
yeah.
that. That just sounded like, it sounded like that's where they really had the fun. I'd like to hear more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just like the album just seems to get better the longer you listen to it. But as I'm saying to the listener, that if they were to put on this album and they want to listen to the whole album, like I wouldn't blame them if they skip the first three songs or whatever. But if they want to listen to the whole album, stick with it because it will get better.
Yeah. Like I was ready. It's like, okay, this is all right. There's some interesting stuff here, but whatever. It's the Carpenters. And then it's like, yeah, okay, let's listen to the second half. And it's like, what did I just get into this? And do I have to go back and listen to the first three to see if they're actually good or was? But I think no. I think it's the record company going with the safe choices for the first couple of songs, and then they were allowed to really do whatever they wanted. Yeah, other than the first couple of songs, I think this is a pretty good album.
Yeah, I know. I was a little bit surprised too. Is it surprised me?
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on you, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. I was not expecting that, and then the last song, the last sort of jam at the end. It's like, okay, this is like the sort of like when the Grateful Dead would get into, some of their longer jams, they would do like it would not sound out of place in like a Grateful Dead jam.
No, I know. No, it was jazzy. It was a little psychedelic. It was honestly just like them being artists. And not just pop stars.
I think, well, I was reading a little bit about them and, you know, I think they always wanted to do that, but it's a tragic tale of, well, Karen Carpenter struggled a lot with her body image and ultimately died from anorexia, but it's a very common tale of their parents being very controlling and very pushing them to perform at a young age when really they just want to be kids. I mean, I know the Beach Boys had that, the Jackson 5 had that, like they had those overbearing parents that would just abuse them and, you know, you got to perform. And it's a similar situation here. I think they always wanted to do sort of a more jazzy sort of thing, but their parents were like, no, we got to make money. You can sing, so you're going to sing songs that are going to be hits. And yeah, their parents were really hard on them for that sort of thing. So it's sad that they never really, that the world doesn't know them as the artists that they actually really wanted to be.
Yeah, No, exactly. After the first half, I was listening. After we were listening to the first half, I was saying I felt like their talents were wasted on, you know, the stuff that they were doing. But I don't think it was necessarily wasted on the stuff they were doing. It was wasted on the stuff that they are known for.
Exactly. Yeah.
They were doing stuff that actually, you know, showcased their talents. You just had to dig deeper.
Exactly. Yeah, you just got to sort of scratch the surface. So so I think it'll be interesting to see, like, what would be your three highlights on the album?
Well, I was trying to figure that out even as the first side was going, and I thought I had it laid out, but then the second side came along and blew all that out of the water. I kind of like the cover of Help still. I thought that was still pretty good. Close to You is a really good song, but it's not really my thing. So, I don't know. I thought Crescent Noon was really nice. That was actually quite, it reminded me of something that, Nina Simone would do or something.
Yeah.
And then, of course, another song. I think that one just blew the whole album out of the water. It
really did. It really did. Yeah, I think I would have to go with, I would pick Help. Because I think, like I said, I think their version more represents the lyrics of the song. As I love the Beatles version, don't get me wrong, but I think that their version really sort of brings out
the emotion in the song.
Exactly, yeah. And another song, I have to go with that, because that was, I think you're right. I think that was Karen Carpenter on the drums. She can absolutely hold her own. And I think I'd have to go to with Mr. Gooder. I really like that one too.
Yeah, it was a pretty good song about nonconformity.
Yeah, exactly. They sort of snuck that in. So would you listen to the album again?
Yeah, maybe. To be perfectly honest, I might skip the first few songs because that's pop pablum. But to get starting with the Beatles cover, maybe, because I thought Reason to Believe wasn't necessarily a bad song. It's a little bit poppy. I was actually a little worried that I thought maybe that was going to be as good as it got. It's not as good as it got.
No.
It got a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
So that song, I could probably skip it too. But yeah, starting at song 5 and going right through the other thing, it's probably worth a listen, I would say. So yeah, I'd say there's enough material on here that's actually a worthwhile listen.
Yeah. And, you know, even if I agree, I would listen to it again. And even if you'd started at song 5, that's 7 songs. That's pretty much a full album there. So like, they could have just released those and it would have been a great album.
I think it's 8 songs.
Yeah, you're right. 8 songs. Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they just released that, that would have been probably an even better album.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to check out polyphonicpress.com. You can get all these episodes, all the back catalog of all the episodes we've done so far. And you can, like I say, you can check out our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. Lots of cool perks there. And be sure to follow the show wherever you're listening, and leave us a rating and review, because it helps out the show and we'd love to hear from you. And I think that pretty much does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.